My name is Sumner Stone. You're listening to Type Radio. Now we're talking.
Typeradio.org.
What sparked your interest in typography?
My interest was from a very charismatic teacher of calligraphy, a man named Lloyd Reynolds, who I encountered as an undergraduate. And I did not actually take a class from him until I had already graduated from college, but I then went back and took a summer class. And I had started doing calligraphy because a number of my friends were very serious students, and I learned from them. I started learning from them. And then the person who actually really sort of took me under their wing and spent a lot of time critiquing my work and helping me was a student of his, you know, fellow student. And I don't know, it was made in heaven. I mean, once I started doing it, it was all over, you know, never looked back.
Can you describe your workplace?
My workplace is part of my house. It always seems to be changing. I've lived so many places. I have not had a stable, residential life. The longest I lived someplace was in Palo Alto, and I lived there for 15 years. Part of that time, 5.5 of those years, I was at Adobe, and I had a small workspace at home, but, you know, not a big deal. And then I rented an office downtown. But now my workspace now is quite large because I devote about half of the house to my studio. So I have two rooms. I have the computer den. Then I have my drawing table in another room with the nice northern light and tables. And yeah, I have very
is
nice
it
me- workspace
Is it messy
now.
Or are you kind of neat?
I'm pretty neat most of the time. Sometimes it gets, you know, a little cluttered, but not very often. Mostly I have people come in. I've had people come and say, "Are you really working?" They expect designers have stuff all over the place. Yeah. And you know.
It doesn't look like that.
Well, sometimes, not very often.
You worked on a Bodoni revival for Linotype.
Yes.
There's this ongoing discussion within the type world between revival versus plagiarism.
Yeah.
Voices that say, like, revival, you just stealing somebody's font, although he's been gone for a while,
yeah.
It's still stealing, you know.
Yeah.
What is
yeah.
your point of view on that?
I think stealing, in the case of somebody who's been dead for a couple hundred years, is kind of a strong word. I didn't think that I was stealing his design. I think that the revivals are a completely legitimate thing to do. I mean, it's interesting now that so many 20th century fonts and even late 20th century fonts are getting remade already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a phenomenon I find sort of surprising.
Revival, even by people who are living,
they do a revival of their own face. That's an interesting thing. And that's actually one of the things about Bodoni that I really, as I learned about him, made an impression on me, which was that he worked on the same material his whole adult life. And you could tell as you went through that he would just change a few characters in the font every once in a while. You could tell by tracing, you know, the dates of the books and the specimens. So that made a big impression on me. I thought, well, you know, the whole notion that you have a typeface design and you work on it and then you finish it and then you put it out and then it's done. It's not something that you have to buy into. You know, this is a kind of a structure that comes from the commercial world. And Bodoni was not a type founder. He had this very special position in which he was, you know, had a patron, and he was a printer. You know, he printed books, and you know, he happened to be a great type designer, but he was not designing type to sell. He was designing type to make his own books, or the books that he printed for other people. So he had the luxury of doing this. And I realized, well, you know, there's no reason why we can't do this now in this digital world, because it's a very different kind of a situation. But
is the distinction not in the naming, or like the marketing of the font then?
Yeah, then you have to make it clear that you've done something different. If you like take a Bordoni font and
call it somebody,
you
know, something else.
Yeah, I think you have to. But I've done this with my fonts. I did this typeface Cycles. I put out, you know, the first version of it, and then I worked on it for a number of years more and did these, you know, the different sizes, and then I released them. And in the process, I completely changed the italic, and I, you know, even of the original.
Yeah,
a version of the font and lots of other things.
So if you buy the same font a couple of years later, you get a different italic, for instance.
Well, it's name. I mean, you can. It's clear what they are. I mean, it's not hidden. You know, you know what they are. But nonetheless, it's part of the same development of the same thing, and it has the same overall name. So.
But do you agree with all the changes that Bordoni made then? I mean, do you see some things and you think,
well, my perception was, he started out and he himself was bought the types of Fournier, and he started printing with Fournier's types, and then he started making his own types, and his types were really based pretty directly on Fournier's types. And what you see is, as time goes on, he develops his own style, and he just gradually worked it out, and it got more and more refined as he went on. And you know, to return to your original question, there are many aspects to doing these revivals. One of the, you know, they're extremely valuable to the people who do them. I think you learn by having to absorb the work of this other person in an extremely intimate way. You learn an enormous amount from doing that. It's just inevitable. And the one that we did was very purposefully different than the other revivals that had been done, and in particular the ones that were the most popular, particularly in the U.S., which were revivals that started in the early 20th century and did not really look very much like Bordoni's type. I mean, they looked in the broad sense, they looked like Bordoni's type, but in the feeling of it and the handmade quality of it, they didn't look like it at all. They looked like they were drawings for machine parts, which is exactly the way that they were treated. You know, that's the way that the whole drafting process for type was done. And I looked at the original ATF drawings for the Bordoni, and they're just beautiful pieces of drafting. But that's not what Bordoni did at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I think the process of revival is an important thing. I think that it has its value, and you know, what some of the most interesting revivals that I've worked with have been the revivals of letter forms that were not typographic, like the Trajan letter forms, which I didn't do the design work, but I instigated doing the design work, and I was involved in the process of doing the design work. And that is, you know, we have the illusion, because it's type that we're copying, that that you can actually copy it. But the fact that the technology and the culture have changed is very, very important. You can't really copy them. You have to make a lot of decisions about what you're doing. And that's why revivals don't all come out to be the same.
Yeah.
They're radical differences. So, yeah. So I think that it's a very valuable process. I do also think that, and Zoff used to always say this, you know, he thought that was terrible to do the revival. You should do new typefaces. And I also agree with that. I mean, I think ultimately, to me, the revivals are, in a certain way, personally, regardless of their commercial situation, a means to get to a place where you're not doing revivals anymore, where you're doing something that comes out of your whole experience of letter making and is an expression of your own experience. So that, you know, that I think is the goal to me of doing those things. The fact that people like them commercially, fine. You know, if you can find somebody to fund your education, it's all the better.
Yeah. What are you working on at the moment?
Well, I'm finishing up. I released a typeface called Magma, which is a sans serif font, recently. And then I made a condensed, actually two different condensed versions of it, which I haven't released yet. But I'm just finishing those up. And that family, and I have kind of grand plans for this family. It's already quite large.
I also saw on the website that you have like the uncial version.
Yes, I made an uncial version mm-hmm. of the sans serif font.
What made you decide to do that? That's so unusual.
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think I mean, I have had a certain fascination with uncial letters on and off for a long time. But one of the things that my talk tomorrow is about the sans serif letter. I call it the pre-serif letter, you know, the Roman monoline letter before serifs were used by the Romans. there was a Maxim Zhukov had a whole view about the world of typography as it applies to different writing systems from his experience of doing typography for the UN for so many years, which was that if you were going to do type design, which was truly, you know, cross-writing system, cross-languages, that the only real alternative was to do sans serif, was to do linear design. Because, for obvious reasons, I mean, it gives some unifying thing. It gives you some way to approach the whole thing. And I think that I thought at the time, right. Good thought. And this Uncial project was a little bit in that spirit of, okay, well, here's a system which we rarely use. We use it for only extremely ornamental purposes. I can make one in a sans serif. And it was a thing that grew out of a playing around with the forms from also previous drawings and so on. And I just started making it, and I liked it. And so I just kept doing it. And
you finished it.
It was easy. I a few people have bought it, not very many. Mm. it's fairly odd, but I like it.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Typeradio.org, broadcasting from Helsinki, ATYPEI 2005.